Well, South Dakota is represented during the virtual roll call at the Democratic National Convention. Governor Kristi Noem will speak at next week's Republican National Convention. Meanwhile, the governor declines a meeting with the state's Tribal Relations Committee. The Dakota Political Junkies are with us to dig into the week's political news. Kevin Killer is a former South Dakota lawmaker and a senior fellow with PRISM. Good morning, Kevin. Welcome back.
Hi, Lori. Thank you for having me.
Tom Dempster is also a former state senator and longtime public servant. Welcome back, Tom. Thanks for being here.
Good to be here, Lori.
We're going to start today with a little bit of audio from last night's Democratic National Convention. And this is a new thing because of the virus, where the roll call was a virtual roll call, and we got to see states and territories right there in their home on the beach in the Black Hills, in front of cars in Detroit, with the roll call and their actual nomination. So I wanted to, if you missed it, here's just a quick 30-second clip. This is Kellen returns from Scout. He's wearing a Protect Sovereignty t-shirt. He's standing in the Black Hills, and here is what he had to say on national television last night.
South Dakota.
Midakiapi, relatives. As a first American and citizen of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, I welcome you to the Pa'asapa, the Black Hills, the site of my creation story and home to the Ocheti Shakowi, the Great Sioux Nation. We often say, Midaku Yeyoyasi, we are all related. Our next president must lead by this philosophy for the betterment of our next seven generations. We cast 3 votes for Senator Bernie Sanders and 17 votes for our next president, Joe Biden.
There is a little procedural moment from last night's Democratic National Convention. That was Kellen returns from Scout with the South Dakota Democratic Party's delegation. Kevin Killer, quite a moment as we got to see people from all over the United States and territories. What do you take away from that moment and how it was so different from the moments in the past?
Sure. I think it was historic in that. It really showcased the beauty of what South Dakota is. And I know there were some other states that had their native representatives as well, like New Mexico, and I can't remember the other 2 states, but there was just a presence, and I think that's probably one of the biggest things. And it's been building up to that for the last couple of sessions. I've had the honor to participate in the convention in 2008 and 2016. And in 2012 too, and you actually see more and more interest towards Native issues, Native presence, and just really acknowledging that. And I think even in the preamble of the platform, there's actually a land acknowledgement to all Indigenous tribes of Wisconsin, because originally that's where it was going to be held. But just basically acknowledging tribal presence, building that good relationships. And just really setting a new dynamic for how we see our communities, how we see ourselves, and, awesome job to Kellen Returns on doing that. He's a friend, and I'm just really proud of him. And, I think he represented us well.
Tom Dempster, what did you think about that virtual roll call? I know I was just waiting for South Dakota, because I didn't know what was going to happen, I guess. And so I'm like, who will it be? Where will they be? And then Kellen came on, and it felt like a really resonant moment. What were your thoughts during the virtual roll call of the convention?
Well, I didn't see it, but it was really fun to hear that. And I, too, have been to a political convention. And what those are all about is it demonstrates what a vast country America is. It demonstrates what a diverse country America is. It's almost as if I wouldn't say it's almost as if it erupts in song, but for both the Democratic and the Republican conventions to come up, it gives you a pretty decent display of who and what we're all about, maybe even our hopes, dreams, aspirations this year, certainly our fears.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about the Republican next National Convention next week, but also we already know that Governor Kristi Noem is the news is that she will speak at next week's convention. Before we get there, are there other thoughts from this week and the message the Democrats are bringing to the country that kind of Help us sort of see what kind of, you know, what's the message they want to spread, and what is its potential impact here in South Dakota? Kevin, do you want to start with that? Any broader thoughts on the Democrat message, the Democratic message this week?
Sure. I think the biggest takeaway is this, you know, again, like Senator Dempster was saying, is that really these are kind of rallying points and an introduction to people who don't really pay that much attention to politics until August, September, October, for better or worse, you know, it's no judgment, but just really, you know, understanding that, you know, these are the two presumptive candidates, and in the case of the Democrats, you know, like with both conventions that took place, you know, President Obama was the nominee, so there isn't really no really build up and all that. Everybody knew that was the candidate, but with Vice President Biden being the nominee, I think there's somewhat still an era of kind of unknown, you know, because we are going through COVID, so you don't see the traditional retail politics and really getting his message out there of, you know, he's building better and he's building back, he's building these kind of solutions. And I just know that slogan because I know the actual person who created that, and unfortunately they didn't get the credit for it, but you know, just really understanding that they're under, you know, this is a new moment and this is a new opportunity to look at things differently, and to also, you know, say, okay, well, how do we come back to, you know, what we were before COVID? Because I think that's the understanding of, like, how do we reset, and how do we deal with this new reality that we're in? And really, I think the Dem platform, you know, of it going all virtual, is really preparing ourselves, our communities, for what the next couple years and really, you know, transitioning us from to a more technological based society, and it's really just a unique time, unique perspectives, and but also too, like Senator Dempster said, we're showcasing all of America, all of our, you know, what we care about, what we hope to see, and just what the future will be.
Yeah. Tom, what is the energy of a convention? You both have been there before. This one is clearly different. But in general, what do the delegates kind of take away from that convention atmosphere? And are there, you know, is it just second best at this point? Or are there also strengths to this new way of doing things because of the pandemic?
Well, hearing what I just heard and seeing all of these delegates in display in their own native lands, if you will, has got to be a real significant opportunity. I mean, I love speeches, good speeches. I love rhetoric. It's an art form for sure. If I have an opponent, I want to hear what my opponent has to say, so that I have the opportunity to build my rebuttal. I think Republicans certainly heard the prosecution and will be hearing more of the prosecution, so that then they have the opportunity, I think it's next week, right, Ben, of preparing their defense. It's quite a marvelous exchange.
Right. Let's talk about what that response from the Republicans might be. We've seen a little bit from the president talking about tax reform and some things that were happening before the pandemic came to American shores. Tom, what do you anticipate from the Republicans? And then we'll talk about Governor Noem's role in that.
Hard to guess. I think particularly with the pandemic, I think the administration has and should have a very difficult time defending itself. I think the responsibility for the lack of response falls greatly upon the Trump administration. Maybe you deflect. Maybe you say, well, let's just make let's continue our move towards herd immunity. It's going to be very interesting to see what the administration's response is going to be. We'll see.
Kevin, any thoughts about what the Republican response might be? Do you think they'll go to before the pandemic and then say, you know, this hit and now we're rebuilding from it. We're still responding. But before, look what we were doing with the economy. Look what we were doing with taxes, some of the other standard, flagship policies of the Republican Party under President Trump in the past 4 years. What do you sort of anticipate?
I think just look, really paying attention to the stock market. And again, I mentioned, Lori, like the economic message around that and seeing how, you know, like I think the stock market is at almost pre-COVID levels, you know, and which was at a record. And understanding that that's probably going to be a big rallying message. I think some of the people they're inviting to the convention are also going to be, you know, free speech advocates, Second Amendments, all that kind of stuff that really kind of generates a base. And understanding that there's also probably going to be some healthcare professionals who have different opinions on the generally prescribed prevention methods for COVID. So I think this really being able to kind of, you know, see that, understand that, but again, I think the biggest message probably would be around economy, you know, and understanding that. We're at pre-COVID stock market levels, and not that that's an indication for the rest of America, but you know that is a easy talking point. So
the great question is, will that resonate with how many people who are out of work? When you talk about pre-stock market levels, will that help? Will that help rally the base, or will that alienate some of those swing voters? It'll be interesting to see. Governor Noem on the docket to speak. We don't have the details for that yet. Tom Dempster, what does this say? You know, much has been talked about and written this year about Governor Noem's sort of rising profile in the National Republican Party. This is another step in that. What do we expect to hear from the governor?
Good question. I'm going to think that we're going to hear very much the same that we heard at Mount Rushmore. I'm going to guess that we're going to hear more of much of the same things that we've heard. We will have a platform of we haven't had a mandate. We haven't in South Dakota. This is home of the free, if you will. I'm going to guess the rhetoric is going to be certainly articulate and certainly pointed.
Let's bring this back home, this conversation back to South Dakota, because Governor Kristi Noem has also recently declined to meet with the state's Tribal Relations Committee, which has taken some criticism from both sides of the aisle. Let's talk about who this Tribal Relations Committee is, what's kind of happening between this committee and the governor right now, why she would decline to meet with them. Kevin Killer, you want to give us a little background and an update?
Yeah, sure. The State Tribal Relations Committee traditionally, I think it was founded in the early 2000s as a way to just build better relationships between the legislature and state tribal government. And always remember that, you know, it's not really the governor, but there's three executive branches. And understanding that in South Dakota, you know, the legislature has unique control, unique power to be able to kind of facilitate and move conversations forward with tribal communities. And traditionally in the past, a lot of tribal governments prefer to go to the route of just working with the governor, because that's just one sole person they have to deal with, rather than 105 different opinions like we have in South Dakota, which is understandable, you know. But at the same time, you know, like if the legislature reached out and said, okay, this is our opportunity to build better relations. And the committee itself is comprised of six members from the majority party and four members of the minority party. And right now it's being led by Representative Sean Bordeaux, who's from Rosebud. And I think the committee itself made a bipartisan request for Governor Noem or her office to show up. From what I read, that didn't happen yet. And hopefully, you know, there's still time. There's always time in politics, so maybe they'll reverse course. But that's something that's kind of a little bit of background. So.
Yeah. All right. So there's always time. There's time in politics. Tom Dempster, what's your advice to the governor?
Well, Senator Keller would know better than me, but I'm going to guess that this disagreement with the Tribal Relations Committee doesn't necessarily mean that there are doesn't necessarily extend to the tribes. every committee has their own dynamics, for sure. Some legislators will do anything and everything they can possibly do to get along with the governor for very good reasons. Other legislators and maybe legislators on this particular committee are pretty well noted for I'm going to punch the governor in the nose any time that I have the opportunity. I'm going to think that that might have something to do a lot with why would I walk into a meeting when I'm going to get punched in the nose.
Kevin, any response to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just really understanding that, you know, as Senator Dempster was saying, that, you know, there's a unique political environment and all that. But at the same time, you know, I think the committee itself has some pressing issues, especially around the checkpoints that they want resolved. But also there's, you know, education issues that are coming up and just general responses to being out there in the community and being a state legislator. And, you know, being a state legislator, working with the state, you know, your constituents always ask you, well, why is the governor doing this or why is the governor doing that? And especially in troubled communities, that's a big question. So, and they're like, well, what power do you have to make sure that the governor comes here? So I think the committee itself is just really, you know, utilizing all resources to have a dialogue. And this has been, again, you know, to reiterate, this has been ongoing, you know, like I think since May, there's been kind of an escalation around the checkpoints and other issues, but, you know, making sure that, you know, there's a continuing dialogue. And I think that's really the best in this situation, just because it's always important to maintain that dialogue for our tribal constituents, tribal communities, and tribal legislators, because there's always questions and issues that pop up out of those areas. So, and that's and that is the role of the committee itself, is they have the ability to do this, you know. So
let's make time to talk about the U.S. Postal Service and from the very rural parts of South Dakota to efforts in Minnehaha County to get ballot drop off boxes around the city. There's a lot happening here that's political, but that is also the optics, at least, are important for the 2020 election. Tom, what do you make of this whole kerfuffle over the U.S. Postal Service so close to an election time during a pandemic when so many ballots will possibly go through the U.S. mail?
Sure, Lori. My impression is there's much more smoke than there's fire here. The post office is a huge bureaucracy. You're not going to turn or change that huge ship around in a matter of a week or 2 weeks or a month or two. Any changes that you would make to it today aren't going to have any impact at all. I think there's more smoke than fire. Certainly every auditor, certainly every county in the country is going to be making every effort that they possibly can, whether it's drop-off boxes or whatever. For me, more smoke than fire.
Kevin, do you agree, or do you think there's more to it than that?
I think the to see both of our U.S. senators who are of the majority party in the Senate, say explicitly that, you know, we are going to make sure that we're going to protect the Postal Service, and we're going to make sure that ensure that the election won't be disturbed. This kind of shows you the pushback, I think, a little bit against that, any kind of election meddling or anything like that, ensuring that all South Dakotans have the right to vote. And the other part of that, too, is, it's almost impossible being in a rural area and not having the post office, because so many people utilize it, so many people rely on it, not only for mailing needs, but also for financial services, because some people don't have bank accounts. And that's, their only place to really get a check or to get a money order or something like that, so they can pay their bills. And really, we can't lose that, honestly. You know, just being from a tribal community and being in a tribal area, you know, we can't lose that service. You know, it's really essential, and it's how we kind of get our services, you know, because some people don't have internet access yet, or some people have lack to access the internet. So sometimes that's the only way they can get paid is through checks, you know, so, yeah.
There's a lot happening here, too, with this trust in institutions. And when Tom talks about smoke, there's also this, you know, why is that smoke there? And, you know, what kind of faith do we put in our public institutions and our government institutions? So we'll have more reporting on that in the days ahead. I want to close. You know, last time we talked, we spoke briefly about a press release Congressman Dusty Johnson put out about Billy Sutton's loss of a child, and how lawmakers and politicians and public servants are human beings. Well, now we're talking about the death of U.S. Senator John Thune's father, who was, I think, 100 years old, a World War II veteran. And I think it just is worth pausing at the end here to say there's a lot of loss happening in people's lives as they continue to do the work that they do. Tom Dempster, any final thoughts on Senator Thune's father, or just, you know, we motor on through this pandemic while these things are happening in our lives, and that's not easy to do.
Well, Lori, thank you for the opportunity to extend my sympathy to Senator Thune and his family. I can only react to this personally. And Kevin, I don't remember where I read this. Might have been Hunter Yo, or might have been maybe a Blackout Speaks or something like that. But I think a Native thought that you could carry, that your grandfather was on your father or your grandfather, you could carry them with you into battle. And I know I have done that with my father many, many times. When I'd be in difficulty, I could sense my father standing on my shoulder with me. I'm going to guess Senator Thune does exactly the same thing. And it's I have a conversation with my deceased father just about every day.
Kevin Killer, anything you'd like to add before we let you go?
Sure. Thank you, Lori, for as well, you know, for letting us extend our heartfelt condolences to Senator Thune and his family. And, you know, in being in office, you know, that's one thing that's hard. You know, I lost my mom, I think, a week before the election in 2014. So, it is tough because the people that instill these values that help you become the person that you are no longer there, you know, your main champions and your main cheerleaders. So it is, you know, it is hard. And so thank you for, you know, allowing us to do this, but also, you know, to, you know, the people listening, you know, definitely that it is a big weight on all of us. And, you know, be appreciative that we're still there, we're still serving. And, you know, but also we're built on the shoulder of giants, you know, that kind of help us. And as Senator Dempster was saying, that, you know, our ancestors are going to be with us. So, yeah.
Well said. Kevin Killer and Tom Dempster. Tom, thank you so much for being here with us. We appreciate your time.
Thank you, Lori.
Kevin, thank you as well.
Thank you, Lori.